So welcome to the Real Big Show, year-end edition, 2 weeks into the new year. Sorry about that. We're a little late, but it's better late than never. I am extremely excited to say that for the first time in a long-ass time, we have a full house tonight. Brad, Melissa, Jeremy, and Liz are joining me for this show, the special show, to discuss our best and worst movies of the year. We'll talk documentaries, indies, and first run. This is very exciting for us to bring this all to you. So without further ado, welcome everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Sweet. So let's begin with our top movies, and I'm going to let Jeremy go. Jeremy, you're up.
You know, who better than to start this whole thing off than
with the bitch.
Big buddy Jeremy. Well, is it time for me to bitch? I'm going to get my top 10. I thought that's a good thing.
Yeah, we'll stay with
too much.
Yeah, we'll stay okay. Without the bitching.
I'll do the, do you want me to do documentaries too, or just the top 10 narrative films?
Both.
All right, I'll do it. Okay. Did they give me the drum roll, if you will? So my top 10 for the narrative films starts off like this. We're going to go with Obvious Child at number 10. Fantastic movie. Jenny Slate, maybe the best performance, except for maybe still Alice and Julianne Moore this year. So amazingly good. Loved it. Number 9, perhaps a shocker to many, going with Gone Girl, David Fincher's movie. Pretty fantastic stuff. I was quite shocked. Not that Fincher would make a good movie, but that Ben Affleck and was able to pull it off. Number 8, the Polish film Ida, about the, well, it's kind of hard to explain. It's about identity. It's about reconciling some things in your past. It's very amazing. Check it out. Number 7, Eliza Hittman's It Felt Like Love, now streaming on Netflix, a fantastic little movie, directed by someone from my alma mater, Indiana University, represent. Number 6, I will go with Boyhood, Richard Linklater's epic film about growing from youth to adulthood. Number 5, and I'm happy to say I actually saw this movie finally. I added in there without having any, haven't seen it, Inherent Vice, Paul Thomas Anderson's wonderful film based on the Thomas Pynchon novel. Number 4, Bong Joon-ho's Snowpiercer, the post-apocalyptic train film with Captain America, John Hurt, and Billy Elliot. Very good stuff. Number 3, Only Lovers Left Alive, Jim Jarmusch's fantastic vampire film with Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston. Number 2, Under the Skin, Jonathan Glazer's brooding, meditative, contemplative alien film. And at number 1, Calvary, Brendan Gleeson's tour de force performance. Actually, I had this one slated number 7 on my list in the summer or somewhere right around that. Having seen it again a couple of times since it came out on video, it shot with a bullet to number 1. So there you have it, kids.
Now, I got to ask you a question about Gone Girl, because I don't know if you felt the same way, because I love the film as well, but I'm just wondering if you felt that it almost felt like Affleck was playing a version of himself in the past.
The philanderer, that guy where he was banging all those broads or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It seemed like he was channeling something from the past because he was a little too comfortable in that role.
Well, his films lately, I think he's been that kind of way. I think it was similar in Argo and The Town, the movies that he's been in the past, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years. He's kind of had that same vibe to himself. I don't know if he's channeling anything in the past. I wish he was channeling a little bit more Shannon Hamilton from Mallrats, but there's only so much you can do with that.
Call me Danny.
There you go.
And you go. Obvious Child.
Obvious Child.
Your thoughts?
What about it?
Oh, well, I haven't seen it yet, so I've been staring at it for weeks now. And
oh, it's amazing. I mean, I put it in my top 10 for a reason. Like I said, Jenny Slate is outstanding. She's out of this world. I think it's a superbly written movie. I think it takes it's nice to see it directed by a woman as well. So it's nice to see the kind of the synergy of the actress and the director kind of coming together and creating this really great character, focusing on things that women focus on and not being trite and silly. Not that that happens a lot, but I just thought it was very topical. And I think her performance was just about as good as they come. I would nominate her for an Oscar for that role without hesitation.
Now, before I let you get into your documentaries, I just want to ask you one question.
Right.
Are you ashamed of yourself for not adding Guardians of the Galaxy to your top 10?
Not ashamed at all. I mean, there are quite a few films I would have liked to have squeezed in there, but it just didn't happen, you know? I feel pretty solid about this list. I think that the top five could switch around in any configuration. Boyhood maybe on the cusp there. But, Guardians of the Galaxy wasn't one of the best films of the year.
All right. On to documentary.
Maybe in that genre, fine, but not as a whole.
Docus.
Docs, top 10. I would start off with Last Days in Vietnam. I saw that at the Indiana... I'm trying to remember. They just changed the name of it. The Indianapolis International Film Festival, which I think is just the Indy Film Fest now. It, very, very amazing film about our closing chapter in Vietnam as the Viet Cong were coming in on Hanoi and the evacuation. We've all seen the footage and the pictures of the helicopters flying away with the people trailing behind them on the helipads on top of hotels. Very amazing stuff. Next one is No No, a documentary. Which I did a review of on Real News Daily. I actually reviewed Last Days in Vietnam as well. This film was about the pitcher Doc Ellis, who was the Muhammad Ali of baseball back in the 70s, very outspoken about African-American rights and didn't really take shit from anybody. And his claim to fame is that he threw a no-hitter whilst on LSD, which is pretty damn big accomplishment if throwing a no-hitter in general, but on LSD is even more special. He was just a very, very interesting guy. He passed away a couple of years ago. It's a real shame. He had a drug problem and kicked, and then he ended up counseling people to do the same thing. Just a very interesting character and a very well-made movie. Number eight, Filmage, The Story of Descendants and All. One of my favorite bands growing up was The Descendants. I listened to them an awful lot. And this was a really nice tribute to a band that's unfortunately been flying under the radar for far too long, except for people that are my age and Michael's age. I know he's also a fan. So I really enjoyed that. Nice to get to see that band get together again and talk about the music that they made, which I thought was it ties very much back to me growing up. Number seven would be Kids for Cash, about the Kids for Cash scandal in Pennsylvania, where two judges put in prison for a very, very long time for taking bribes to sentence kids to a for-profit detention center. It's one of the most horrific things that I've ever seen, and I can't even fathom what I would do if that happened to my children. Number six is Frederick Wiseman's National Gallery, about the inner workings of the National Gallery in London. It's very long, and it's cinema verite at its finest. Wiseman is one of the godfathers of that particular movement in this country. He sets up his camera and just lets it do its thing. He does a very great job of editing together all the footage that he takes to create a narrative where there probably isn't one. It's really, really amazing. Number five, Dinosaur 13, about the location, excavation of Sue, the Tyrannosaurus Rex that now resides in the Field Museum in Chicago, and about what happened to the paleontologist that discovered her. They were taken to court, indicted, and convicted on some charges for ridiculously trumped up charges for illegal fossil hunting. Real shame. It's a great movie, though. Very, very tense, even though you know the outcome. Most people do. I put it on par with something like Man on Wire. It was very, very good. Number four, Life Itself, about Roger Ebert. Very stunning film. I got to see Steve James present this movie at the Indiana University Cinema earlier this year. I met him. He was fantastic. It's just a movie that'll blow you away. It really puts Roger Ebert in a different light. We all know him as the movie critic, but as a person, he was a very interesting person, especially in the last part of his life because James was filming as he was dying of cancer. Number three would be 1 Million Dubliners, about Glasnevin Cemetery in Dublin, where at least a million folks are actually buried, including every major national political figure in Ireland outside of Wolfe Tone. Being an Irishman, I'd say great heart with a lot of the folks that are buried there. I went to Ireland and Glasnevin on my honeymoon and got to convalesce where Michael Collins is buried, my absolute all-time hero. So it's very impressive. It tells the story of several of the folks that work at the the cemetery and has a very surprising ending, which will catch you off guard. I promise that. Number two would be The Unknown Known, the fantastic Errol Morris documentary about Blight and Assmunch, Donald Rumsfeld, who was former Secretary of Defense under George W. Bush. And lastly, Finding Vivian Maier. This is a film about a gentleman who came across a lot of photographs and negatives and undeveloped film of an unknown photographer in Chicago named Vivian Maier. And the photographs are out of this world, beautiful, amazing, capturing a very long period of time over about 40 years and the efforts that he's done to get her recognized for her art.
Is Assmunch a professional term?
Only when talking about douchebags like Donald Rumsfeld.
Just wanted to clear that up real quick.
Yep.
Well, these are some fantastic lists, and definitely about four documentaries on there that I have been dying to see. I did get to see Filmage, which it would be on my top 10 if I did a documentary list, but I'm not going to. So, kudos to you, my friend.
Thank you. Best lists of all.
Yeah. Lizzie.
Yeah.
You're up, sunshine.
I'm up. All right. I guess everybody sort of forced me to number, especially you, Michael. You're like, no, I need numbers. 1 through 10.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's funny how it slips your mind, but that's fine. It's fine. You're not the only one that was like, oh, I need numbers. So I just sort of like put this all together.
Awesome.
The top five can sort of go any which way for the most part, but here goes nothing. So my number 10 film for the year was Fish and Cat, which is actually an Iranian film, which is, I think, one of the most unique film experiences I've ever had. It's actually in one take, which when you see the film, you will be absolutely mind blown by this feat because it sort of time loops in a forest/lake location, and your eye goes from one corner of the screen and the camera pans to another corner of the screen, you know, in this single take, and you're seeing the same characters exit and enter within minutes. And I don't know how that's physically possible, but apparently they rehearsed for about a month and a half before shooting with the entire cast. And it is based on I would say urban legend of two restaurateurs near a campsite who, rumor has it, were killing students and cooking them in their restaurant.
Yum.
Yeah, which is very interesting because it's not really what you really get into in the film. It's very complex, very intriguing. I highly recommend it. It's definitely one to see just for the feat of the filming itself. So that's my 10. Number 9 is Dom Hemingway, which was for me a very larger than life post, you know, after a 12-year prison sentence, Jude Law gets out of prison and he's a notorious safecracker and he wants revenge on the guys that he went to jail for. It is extraordinarily colorful, really interesting, one of the most literally in your face opening scenes that I've ever seen in a film, which Melissa and I saw it together. And when you see it, you'll be like, oh, okay, that's awesome. Yeah, literally Jude Law I didn't even recognize him when he came on screen. He's super jacked. He has a crazy accent. Everything is really heightened. The colors are really heightened. It's kind of like almost like Sin City meets the new Romeo and Juliet. It's crazy, but I highly recommend it. Has anybody else seen it besides Mel and I?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Okay. Jeremy, I think you'd really like it. It's really cool. It's very different. Number 8 is Wetlands, which is probably one of the craziest movies, definitely hands down the most disgusting film I've seen, and not because it's gory, just because it's about like a young girl who's about 19 years old. It's a German film, and she is very, let's see, anti-society in the sense of personal grooming habits, and she cuts herself shaving in a not very opportune spot and ends up in the hospital. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of really interesting acts with pieces of vegetables and things. And it's weird and cool and just like in your face, totally non-apologetic. It's just really awesome. Great music. Also highly recommend.
It's streaming on Netflix now for anybody out there.
Oh my God. Is it really?
It sure
I'm
is.
Adding it right
no
now.
No way. That's hearing. Amazing.
That's amazing. And it, let's just say that's amazing. When you see it, you'll understand why that's like totally crazy to me, but I'm so glad so people can go watch it. Number seven is Coherence, which I know, Jeremy, you're also a huge fan of.
Very big fan, yes.
Very cool. This is a sci-fi thriller, and what I think I also enjoyed was that there's no real script. It's all based on just notes, and I think it was, I don't know, filmed over like a couple nights maybe. It really messes with your head. I don't think I walked away. I walked away loving it, first of all, and I really need to watch it again. And I walked away not really sure what happened in the end, which is great. Like you just sort of have to think about the movie, and I'm a huge fan of that. So that was really cool. Number six was Snowpiercer, which we pushed hard and proud, and is on. If you have not seen it yet, shame on your face, and go see that. And that's on Netflix as well. Number five is Birdman, Michael Keaton's little comeback. I shouldn't say little, but awesome comeback flick, which if you don't know and you haven't seen it yet, is also filmed to appear as if it is one take, which is great because it's set in a theater background. And so for them to coordinate that is very much parallel to putting on a live Broadway show. And it's very cool. It's very interesting. It's very intriguing. It's probably one of the greatest cons they pulled on at Comic-Con this year, because it's not a superhero movie at all. And it's, for me, I don't know about you guys, but it very much parallels his life, you know, Michael Keaton's life, I think, you know, X, you know, superhero type of thing, and, you know, trying to make a comeback. I don't know. I just thought that was really cool and very appropriate for now. And I would really like to see him get an award. I'm just a little bit torn as to who's going to win. So we'll see how that goes, because I'm a big fan of Eddie Redmayne. I thought that his win for The Theory of Everything was very well deserved, although I love me some Michael Keaton. So number four is Boyhood, which we all love, and you can read the review in the press conference at Real News Daily, which is awesome. Number three is Frank, Michael Fassbender, which I was kind of sad that he wasn't nominated for this role, because he has a giant papier-mâché head on the entire movie, and yet there's a fully fleshed out character that you totally buy and read and are with the entire film. And the music is weird and will get in your head in the best way possible. I think there's like 30 tracks on the soundtrack right now, which is insane. A lot of just very strange. Some of their tunes that they make in this film are like 30 seconds long, but you'll love every single one of them because they're quirky and strange. And it's actually a really emotional movie once you reach the sort of the denouement. So I highly recommend that. Very quirky, very fun. And tied for first place, because I couldn't decide, is a tie between Only Lovers Left Alive, which obviously Jeremy, you very much enjoyed as well. I think most of us did. The only way I describe this film is sort of like a pop culture volcano. So if you read things in general, if you're up on pop culture and history and all sorts of fun stuff, like this movie will speak to you. I think it's really cool and a really different look at vampires. Very neat. And then ironically tied for first place, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is another Iranian film, which is also about a vampire shot completely in black and white with these incredible archetypes, the prostitute, the bad guy, the James Dean, you know, the street urchin. And it's also larger than life, but ironically has an amazing soundtrack. There is more music in this movie than there is actual dialogue, and it's really freaking cool. And I got 15 minutes in, and I paused it, and I emailed everybody. I was like, this movie is my jam. I don't know what it is about it. It's just incredibly unique. Strong female characters. It's really cool. You can also check out my review on Real Men Daily. So there you have it. There's my top 10 for 2014.
That's a fantastic list.
Very eclectic. I'm serious. It's like all a little bit all over the place, but that's my thing.
No, I've been dying to see a couple of those films that you have on that list, and a few of the reviews that you've posted have made them sound like I am doing myself a disservice not seeing them. So I will be seeing Fishing Cat and A Girl Walks Home Alone at night this weekend if I can.
Awesome. I should be seeing A Girl Walks Home Alone Friday.
Sweet.
Nice.
We can talk about that soon.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. I am extremely nervous about this, but Brad, you're up.
You should be, Petrelli. Actually, it's not as bad as you think. All right, we're going to start with number 10, and that's Nightcrawler. Jake Gyllenhaal reinventing himself again from angstridden teenager to gay cowboy to just total Travis Bickle psychopath for this generation. He just blew me away, and it was fantastic to see Bill Paxton, you know, back on the screen. Love Nightcrawler. They captured 4 a.m. in a major city perfectly. Like, that is 4 a.m. in any metropolitan city. So Nightcrawler at number 10. Number 9 is hashtag Walrus Yes. Kevin Smith's Tusk. I have nothing bad to say about this movie. I know our wonderful host hates it. But, you know, any movie that turns Justin Long into a walrus and has Haley Joel Osment actually getting him some, it's a winner in my book. Number 8 is a movie I had no clue about anything going into it, and that is Charlie McDowell's The One I Love. I thought I would hate this movie, but watched it and I was like, wow, Malcolm McDowell's son has like amazing directorial skills, and this movie just blew me away. I mean, I don't really want to talk about it because it'll ruin it. Like, it's best to just watch this movie. Not.
Whoa.
Oh. Did we lose Brad? Where'd he go?
What do you mean? He's there.
I don't hear him anymore.
Is he hiding on us?
He's hiding. I can hear him.
I cannot. Brad. Hear him.
I cannot hear him.
Oh, my God.
I can hear Brad.
That's so weird. I totally
can hear Brad.
I can hear Brad. I can't hear Brad, actually.
I can't hear him at all.
No. Cool. So we'll have to splice this part out.
Nobody else can hear Brad except for me.
Yeah.
He's a voice in my head.
Can you can hear us, right, Mel?
Yeah, I can hear everybody.
Can he hear you?
I'm omnipotent.
Can he hear you?
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, Brad, hang up and call back.
Sorry, Brad. I was so into your list.
I know.
I was like, I was like, is he pausing for dramatic effect?
I just love, like, all these are great lists.
Yeah, they're crazy different, too. I love that.
But right. Just enough overlap.
Brad, are you here?
Right, is that better?
Yeah.
There he is.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Yes.
So...
All right, so...
Where did everyone lose me at? Did everyone hear The One I Love?
Yes, we heard that part.
Okay. Next one, we're going to go with a film that I think I might be the only person in the United States of America that loves, and that's David Cronenberg's Map to the Stars.
I loved it too, dude. I loved it.
It is, for a Cronenberg fan, this is his thesis statement on how Hollywood has absolutely ass-raped him, like, and just destroyed his soul. Like, I mean, for someone who studies everything Cronenberg does, this is like his final fuck you to Hollywood, you know, to mainstream Hollywood. And I found it fantastic, but it's an acquired taste. I think we talked about that last week. It's definitely an acquired taste film. Next, we've got Jim Mickle's excellent Cold in July, which is absolutely Don Johnson's best performance ever. Like, seems like he was made to play the role that he plays. It's a adaptation of a Joe R. Lansdale novel, which Joe R. Lansdale is one of the most difficult authors to actually bring to the screen. So the fact that he brought it all together kind of shocked me. Next is the, next we've got Blue Ruin, which is Jeremy Saulnier's, for people who to follow Jeremy Saulnier. He did the horrible fucking movie Murder Party, which was just atrocious. And he comes with Blue Ruin, which I think is going to change the face of, you know, independent dramas. It's just it's essentially, for people who haven't seen it, like if a normal everyday Joe decided to be Charles Bronson, it's what would happen if he decided to, you know, go all Death Wish Charles Bronson style.
And I believe that's on Netflix now too, right, guys?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a very good one, too.
Next, we have Starry Eyes, which absolutely blew me away with... it's essentially the worst Hollywood casting couch an actress could ever be on. Really, I guess the best way to put it would be transcendental horror. if Terry Gilliam directed a hardcore horror movie, you know, with... I guess mix Terry Gilliam with Roman Polanski. It's out there. Let's see what we got next. All right, so next we have a film that I think it's forgotten about because it came out like the middle of the year, and that's Filth with James McAvoy.
Yay!
Absolutely, like, that's my favorite performance of his, and just that movie is so tight and strong and doesn't really falter for me anyway. Next, well, we mentioned Terry Gilliam earlier. It's Terry Gilliam Zero Theorem. Jeremy, am I pronouncing that right?
Theorem.
Sorry. You know, Theorems. I got that Southern slang, you know,
Theorem.
So yeah. Oh my gosh. You put Terry Gilliam and naked Christoph Waltz and Matt Damon together. Good grief. You have an instant classic.
Two lists. Amazing. Yeah. It's a great movie.
Oh, he's so good in that. Yeah.
Absolutely great. I just wish Terry Gilliam would get, you know, a budget and, you know, steady stream of films thrown his way. So here's hoping. Yeah. And all right, now we're at my number one, and that's the director who can do no wrong, and that's Lars Van Trier's Nymphomaniac.
I wondered where that was coming on the list.
No, he can do no. To me, I mean, yeah, I might be the fanboy waving the flag, but. His films, like, I've seen everything he's done, even, like, the obscure, you know, art films from before he was Lars Van Trier, and I've never seen him misstep, so, I mean, that movie is brutal, and if you can have Shia LaBeouf having anal sex in a garage and it seem plausible, you got my vote.
It seems plausible to me. I don't know.
Brad.
Am I the only one on that boat?
Yeah, I think there's probably something that's probably going on right now, actually.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
All right,
yeah.
Let's put, if you can have Christian Slater shitting himself in a hospital bed and it be believable, you've got my vote.
That's probably happening too. So.
Amen.
All right.
Brad, I've been staring at my list here and I'm looking, I don't see the sacrament anywhere. Is there something you want to comment on?
Damn it.
Damn, seriously.
Okay.
Happy Christmas. Don't forget the Swanberg Happy Christmas.
Oh, right now. With Swanberg. All right. Proxy's on the worst list as well. He completely tanked that movie. So much potential on his acting just tanked it. Who gave him a lead in that? It was some Indiana director, Zach Parker, I believe, gave him a lead in that.
We'll get to our worst soon.
When you have a film that is shot as a Vice documentary, you do not have a scene where there is one camera shooting. There is no way heavenly possible, even if Jesus himself came down, that you could do a shot reverse shot. There's no way humanly possible. And then if you have a film where the camera that has 98.9% of your footage for your Vice documentary on a table in a building that the building burns to the ground. They're not doing remote Wi-Fi backups of their data in the middle of the jungle. And they hop on a helicopter and fly home. The best way to put, he's either too fucking stupid to direct movies or he doesn't care, and that insults the audience intelligence. And insulting the audience intelligence is unforgivable. So,
wow, that sounds like Black Hat. Oh. Damn.
Fuck Ty West.
All right, Mel, you're up, darling.
All right.
You get to follow that.
Yeah, fun. my list is kind of a combination of everybody else's, so I kind of, but hey, that's the way it is.
Of course.
So I have a few unique things in there. My number 10, I'm going to start out with a movie I saw at South by Southwest that was released this year and that I rediscovered after I found a little postcard. It's from Argentina. It's called The Desert, and it's about the zombie apocalypse. But
what?
I know.
I want it.
Yeah, I need
this
movie. And every movie on my list is one that like kind of affected me as far as like it just hit me. I just really connected with it. And this movie I really enjoyed because, you know, the hook of the apocalypse and zombies obviously get people in the theater, but mm-hmm. it's really about the three people and the dynamic of what's happening. So, you know, it's the apocalypse and they, you know, to kind of give themselves a society, they each go into like a separate room and like record their thoughts and then put it in this like safe box so that nobody else can see it. So they can sort of feel like they can, you know, unload their feelings.
Cool.
And of course, you know, things happen.
Very cool.
That, you know, and, but at least 75% of the audience walked out during the course of the movie, which Whoa. Was fantastic just because they weren't expecting it. They wanted to see zombies. It was much too slow for them. But if you stick with it, it was, it's just done in a very interesting way. So that was one that I really liked. My number 9 will be Locke, with Tom Hardy. A lot of people really didn't care for this movie, but I found it incredibly moving. His transformation of, you know, a guy in a car the entire time. And there was just something very subtle about his performance that I really enjoyed.
Super awesome one, Mel. Good choice. I just watched that for the first time a couple of days ago.
I really love that.
Traffic is fine.
Yeah, I mistake.
What a great movie.
I mistakenly picked up the Ethan Hawke, Selena Gomez driving movie, whatever that was
oh
called.
Oh, my God.
Thinking
yeah.
that I was watching Locke, and guess what? It
you
wasn't Locke.
Weren't about it.
So I'll be finding that soon.
You guys, on that tail end, because we're on the subject, did you guys see a couple hours ago that Danny Boyle is talking about 28 Months Later?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
Which I was.
Are you going to direct it?
I don't know. There's just sort of buzz. It looks like, I don't know. There's just like pieces of conversation on the internet. So who knows?
Wow.
It looks like he would. Nice. And then that Andrew McDonald would be the producer.
Interesting.
That's all I know so far. We'll keep everybody updated. But anyway, so I thought I'd pop that in there.
Number 8, is one that was mentioned, Filth. I was trying to decide between Filth and Dom Hemingway, but, I ended up going with Filth, just because of, the outlandish and such a great performance from James McAvoy. So he inched out, Jude Law. Sorry, Jude. Number 7 is Coherence that Liz mentioned earlier. Really just completely floored me. I had no idea what was happening. It was amazing. So I highly recommend that one, just like she does. Another one, Frank, was just a really unbelievably sweet performance. And yeah, I'm just shocked that Michael Fassbender isn't nominated for something over that, because it was just really sweet, just extremely sweet and touching to see a performance without any sort of facial expression. And the next one, number 5, I guess, would be Birdman. That was just fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one again, because that's a very visually stimulating movie. So anybody who could see that in the theater, please definitely see that in the theater, because that one is definitely worth a big screen experience. Only Lovers Left Alive is my number four, which was mentioned before as well. Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton swoon. And then number three, Inherent Vice.
Because.
I am very looking forward to seeing that movie again and owning it, as I'm just ridiculous in collecting at this point. Number two, which has not been mentioned, Grand Budapest Hotel. This is definitely one of my all-time favorites, in as far as Wes Anderson goes. Just the production design, you know, he always has a great list of characters and cast. But there was just something about this one that I really loved Gustav H. And
he's awesome.
His character, you know, makes the movie. And then number one, which should be no surprise, is Snowpiercer. It will not be knocked off my number one just because it was extremely entertaining. And I think it's the number one entertaining movie of the year for me.
Now, I got to ask the Frank fans. Do you think Fassbender suffered from the quote-unquote not-on-screen award hate that happened with Scarlett the year before and happens with Andy Serkis every year?
1,000%, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it.
That's
no
what doubt I was about,
I mean, it's an absolute... It's weird because part of me also thinks that there should be, like, a separate category for animated voices. And I think maybe I'm saying that probably because whenever I hear Dory, Ellen DeGeneres, I think that's a great performance. Like, why is that not more recognized? So there needs to be some sort of other category because they're just, people are missing out. And I think that they need to be recognized for these performances. So yes, I'm just, yeah.
Yep.
I agree.
Yeah. It's a shame, too.
They're being prejudicial because he's Irish. I'm just saying that now. Get off my Irish brothers. I mean, Irish men nominated. Brendan Gleeson is nominated. That's some bullshit. No?
Oh, good Lord. I got to follow the brood up. All right. So my top 10 list is not your conventional top 10 list. It's more of a fans list. It's fans of things that I like and movies that I enjoyed sitting down with a lovely medium popcorn and watching a fun film. So my number 10 film is James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy, one of my favorite comic book adaptations that has come out in recent memory. Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana led this brooding crew of misfits with Bradley Cooper as the voice of Rocket Raccoon and Dave Bautista, the WWE wrestler, as Drax the Destroyer, and of course Vin Diesel uttering three words throughout the entire film. Actually, no, five words as Groot. So if you haven't seen it, you should. It's a lot of fun. Number nine is David Goyer's Fury, a film that I actually went in with extremely low expectations of and came out with a new belief that the man can direct. He's struck out in the last several years with some really bad movies, Sabotage, but he really does make a great film. Shia LaBeouf is fantastic. Brad Pitt and John Berthal are all really, really good. The one dry spot for me was Logan Lerman, who was supposed to be, I think, more or less the focal point of the film. I thought his performance was a little lacking. That's why the film makes my top 10, but is very low down on the list. Number eight, I agree with Brad. I think Nightcrawler is
I forgot the board.
It is actually a extremely impressive performance by Jake Gyllenhaal, who loses me from time to time with his performances, but this one was unbelievably spot on, and I agree with you 100%. It is the perfect way to show a city at 4 a.m. because I've been in LA at 4 a.m. and I can tell you it does look like that, and it was perfect. So kudos to them. Number 7 was snuck into the list on January 17th when I got the film this or viewed this film, Imitation Game. Benedict Cumberbatch, Keira Knightley, and Matthew Good as the story of Alan Turing, the man who basically stopped the world, the war, by cracking the Enigma code, the Nazi code that was able to communicate between all the forces. Benedict Cumberbatch, for me, and I agree with you, Liz, with Eddie's performance in Theory of Everything, but for me, the performance of the year was definitely Benedict Cumberbatch. And I don't think, going with either one of them, I don't really think you're losing anything. So
yeah, I haven't seen, and it's shameful that I haven't seen The Imitation Game yet. I obviously could change my mind, but from what I, that's simply the reason why I picked that. So I am dying to see it, and I will do so.
And I'm a little worried that Morten Tildum, who is not really known for directing, some epic films. He's directed a few lower, I don't want to say not known, but he really deserves a chance at being nominated for a director this year. So hopefully he gets a chance. A little lower on my list than most of you, but definitely could be in the top 5 if I wanted it to, but I don't. Is Jim Jarmusch's Only Lovers Left Alive. For me, one of Tom Hiddleston's, it's probably his finest performance that he's turned in to date. And definitely a reason to make, and I'm going to use the word for Liz, and only for Liz, women moist.
Wow.
Bam. Geez. Got it.
I'm worried that I'm rubbing off on Mike.
But Brad, I don't think you'd even say that, though. That's the thing.
Oh, I can say far worse. Listen to my podcast.
But you wouldn't. That's not on this one, you wouldn't.
Oh, no, not on this one. Well, fear that I'd be in the way of Corey.
Liz knows why I said that, so.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. My number 5 film of the year is Gareth Edwards' The Raid 2, which may be karate action film, Godfather, Scarface, whatever you want to. It is the most epic action film that you may ever see in your entire life. There's one scene in the film that I may never forget. As long as I live. Actually, I may have Alzheimer's disease and still only remember this one scene for the rest of my life. It's a kitchen scene that lasts close to 8 minutes. And I believe, if I read this correctly, it was filmed completely without breaking. So, which is an even amazing testament to that actual scene. But if you have not seen The Raid 2, I highly recommend it. It is one of the most brilliant action films of all time.
And I'm flogging myself right now because I forgot that. That's horrible.
Exactly.
I forgot that.
Isn't it like the number one film in Brazil?
It may be it's the number one film.
I know The Raid was. I don't know if the Raid 2 surpassed it or not.
It is on par. And I'm serious when I say this about the film. I have seen multiple amounts of action films and even probably the same amount of martial arts films. I have literally never seen anything like this. And if you haven't seen it, you really need to see it. So I'll buy you a copy if you haven't seen it, goddammit. My number 4 film of the year, again, is a retread from every one of our lists, I believe, is Snowpiercer. I'm not sure I really need to say anything more about this that we haven't already said. I will say this, that I have had some conversations with people that have seen it that have told me that they hated it beyond belief. And I was concerned for their well-being, actually. I spent several hours consoling them about why God hates them and why their lives are useless. And they still don't get the film. So hopefully everyone will see it and they will get it. And if you don't, let us know why, because I'd love to know. And when you're not going to ever breed again.
Wow.
The trailer's drunk.
My number three film of the year, which didn't make any of your list, shame on you, is Chris Nolan's Interstellar. For me, I think he finally, Chris Nolan, that is, finally made the film that he's been talking about for close to 15 years. As close to a film as like 2001 that we'll probably ever see again. A brilliant film with a lot of thought to it. It did do pretty well at the box office, but I think there was, it probably could have done better if people actually got it. But I can safely say that I am one of the people that did get it. The visuals were astronomical, astounding. And the performances by Matthew McConaughey and Michael Caine were great.
Not Matt Damon. Jesus, the hokiest fucking part of any movie all damn year.
Yeah, he was pretty. He was pretty bad.
Horrible.
You haven't seen The Sacrament yet, Jeremy.
No, I haven't.
Go watch that.
My number two film of the year is Birdman. I agree 100,000% with Liz on this, that Michael Keaton is fantastic. For me, I agree again with Liz on this, that I really believe that the film was made for him. I actually thought about Batman the entire time I was sitting in that theater, thinking that he did walk away from Batman. He didn't want to make another one, and he wanted to continue his career to make dramas. And it's a similar type of role for what actually happened in this film. And the long shots are just epic. I mean, the way that they shot the film, I've seen very few times executed that perfectly. And that's a testament to the director and the cinematographer. And it's definitely a film that deserves all the credit in the world and all the kudos it's getting. But it's not the number one movie in the year, because that stands the test of time. And that is Richard Linklater's 12-year love letter to growing up. And that's Boyhood. A film that will resonate for, I'll probably say the rest of my life with me. It touched me on a lot of different levels. And I think having been able to watch my nephew grow up in a similar way to Eller or Mason in the film is probably the biggest reason why the film stuck with me so much. He's now a college student and he is an art student, and he is with a single mother, and it is something that I could see too many similarities that were eerie in my life, and it was perfectly timed for me. Definitely losing my brother in 2007 and watching, basically taking my nephew as the focal father figure in his life. So Boyhood, that's it, number one. And it will stay there with a bullet. So hopefully I was glad to see it win the Golden Globe. Hopefully it will follow through to the Oscars. And but we shall see. So quickly, I think we should run down the worst films of the year. So maybe just a couple from each of us, so we're not overwhelming the listeners here. So Jeremy, give me two.
Oh, Jesus. You know, we were going through the list of the worst movies on, I can't remember the name of the one that I reviewed that was so fucking bad. It was so bad.
You forgot it. You totally pushed it out of your memory.
Let me see if I can find the name. Skip me. Let me come back.
All right, Liz.
I'll find it.
Oh, it's got to be hands down Hill of Freedom, which we saw at New York Film Festival, which was a piece of garbage.
Is that a Crabs movie?
No, but that was a piece of garbage too. Okay. That's
mine then. All right.
That was a Tribeca. And that was oh God, something about youth and what the hell is the name? It's a really long name. Anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, no. Hill of Freedom. I think I reviewed this on To See or Not To See. It was one of the first things I did, and I think I yelled at the camera because I was so angry that this was something that was chosen for the festival. And just to recap, the movie is about some guy who writes a bunch of love letters to a girl, and he goes and he visits her. The acting is one of the most atrocious things I've ever seen in my life. It's like a total joke. I'm watching and think this isn't like the audience is laughing at them, like how bad the acting is. Like that's not supposed to happen. Like it's not a spoof. Like it's a real film, or quote giant air quotes, it's a real film. It's like 68 minutes long. It's terrible. It looks like it was shot on somebody's giant camera from 1986, which is not like cute, not done artistically. It's just bad. Like everything about it is bad. And it's really weird because last week I ran into a review on IndieWire and they gave it like a B. And I was like, were we watching the same movie? Are you insane? What crack were you smoking? Anyway.
Wow.
Sorry. See, look how emotional I am. It's a piece of crap. And
I don't think I'm going to see this movie ever.
You were awesome. You were awesome.
All right,
stop talking about it now.
Give me one more.
One more. I don't know. We see so much stuff, but it's got to be. What is that movie? Oh, it's the same movie that Melissa's talking about. What
Young Bodies Heal Quickly.
Young Bodies Heal Quickly.
Ooh.
This movie has no plot. No plot. Which sometimes is intriguing. This, no, not intriguing. It's just weird. Nothing happens. There's barely any dialogue. And the dialogue that does happen makes absolutely no sense about these two young boys who, like, I don't know if they commit a crime at the beginning by, like, beating the shit out of some girl with a bat and then just, like, run into the woods and their, like, fucked up, like, coked out mom drops them off in the middle of the highway and they're, like, I don't even know. They, like, find their dad, and the movie is, like, 10 hours too long. It's not 10 hours long, but it feels like it's 10 hours long. It's just, it's awful. Also, wow. Do not see that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know, right? And it was a Tribeca film. I was like, who picked this?
Ugh, these both sound awful. I'm
very emotional right now.
I found my movie, if you guys want me to get it.
Go.
I found it, okay?
What is it?
And be prepared. It's a movie called Brush with Danger.
And, what
was
that?
It's fucking horrible. Jeez. I reviewed it on Real News Daily. I don't think I think it was a little kinder in my review than I probably should have been. I mean, I've shit better things than this thing. It was really, really bad. I mean, just if you look at the poster, here's what it says. A painter, a fighter, ellipsis, dot, dot, dot. Brush with Danger. It's supposed to be like a commentary on immigration of illegal immigrants coming to the United States and capturing the American dream, but of course a woman is a painter and she gets tricked into doing forgeries that a guy sells, and her brother becomes a cage fighter underground so he can make money, and it's just so fucking bad. It's like The Room but with Asians. It takes itself very seriously, and it's just so bad. It's just so bad. I mean, I'd rather smell dirty socks than watch that thing. It was so bad. And if I had to give another one, having two children, Brad, I know that you can sympathize with me. I see a lot of really, really bad movies, but I saw that Earth to Echo movie.
Oh, that's shit, dude.
Oh, it was so fucking bad.
It was
a straight ripoff of E.T. and the Goonies. I mean, it was those two combined, and it was like a shitty ripoff of E.T. and the Goonies. And they had a black kid in for multicultural purposes, I guess. It was a shit pile. It was a shit pile. My kids loved it, which makes me sad, because usually they have pretty discerning palates about what's good and what's not. But, man, that movie sucked.
Oh, hi, Jeremy.
that just reminded me, like, who said Chinese people? Did someone mention Chinese people?
No.
I did say that there are people from China.
Okay, that reminded me of a movie.
Asian Americans.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, preferred nomenclature. Yeah, I'm with you.
whatever. This is about like true Chinese people. And it is a horribly shitty movie. Now, I love Nicolas Cage almost as much as probably his mother or his wife. But holy Christ.
His third wife?
Outcast with him and Anakin Skywalker. What's his name?
Anyone? Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen.
Yes. Holy Christ. They are samurais who like take down this Chinese empire.
What?
It is the biggest. What? Now, Nicolas Cage has done some really amazing, mind blowing performances. This is not Vampire's Kiss. This is not Leaving Las Vegas. This is not anything good, Nicolas Cage. This, like, Keanu Reeves plays a more convincing samurai warrior than Nicolas Cage.
And hell yeah, he does.
That is where you should hang yourself, you know, in your career. It is an absolutely horrid movie.
Well, I mean, Hayden Christensen, if he's in it, it's a fucking automatic shit pile, too.
And he's brooding, like, he's the hero. You know, Nicolas Cage is like the guy. They used to be partners.
Wait a second.
Like these assassins, and they, you know, like split up, and he like finds Nicolas Cage years later to take down this like Chinese emperor and save the emperor's daughter who he wants to bang. And it's like, wow, Nicolas Cage, how bankrupt are you? Like, now, if you give me, as a independent film director, if you give me Nicolas Cage, Hayden Christensen, and a village of Chinese people, I'm going to make the greatest exploitation film of all time. But that is absolutely horrendous.
He was good. Yep. He made a good movie, Jumper.
I would have to say.
Come on now. Come on.
I was trying.
It would have to be See No Evil 2, which See No Evil was a good little horror movie. See No Evil 2, the Soska sisters have like the biggest hype machine behind them. Now to take on, I don't watch professional wrestling, but to take on a huge like franchise slasher and to have a great, you know, horror centric cast of Daniel Harris and Catherine Isabel, you know, and have the whole fanboy thing behind you. This is the most bloodless, sexless, boobless slasher you will ever see. And the fact of how a 7-foot-tall man can hide in the back of a Volkswagen and then at a gate and then jump out of the back of a Volkswagen while the one survivor is out by a gate leaving. Somehow he stayed in the back of the Volkswagen all the way while the one survivor drove up to the gate to leave. And then gets out of the Volkswagen, spoiler alert, somehow ends up behind him, like a quarter of a mile away, and kills the lone survivor without making a fucking noise. That's almost as bad as burning all your footage for your film in a hut out in the middle of the jungle. Almost, not as bad.
That's like 3 movies you got here, buddy.
Yeah, that's why. Well, that has to offset the fact that you're going to say Tusk, even though it's cold.
All right, Melissa. 2.
The first one I was going to say was The Young Bodies Heal Quickly that Liz was talking about. Because that's the first thing that came to my mind. but then I was looking through, you know, movies of last year, and suddenly I saw Endless Love.
Whoa.
I wanted to stab myself the entire time.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Oh, I remember when you guys went to see that, and I was just like, what are you doing?
I know. It was
free.
I was in some sort of like, oh, romantic movie. Oh, my God, no.
Sometimes like free is not girl. The best price,
no.
Guys.
No. We get so many.
Like, seriously, I'm like, you know how you identify with characters? I identified with her parents.
Wow.
Because I was like, yes, do not let her see this dude. Tell her she has to go to college.
Oh, like, my God. Do you remember? God. This is one of our first Girls on Film podcasts that we did. We shit all over this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I do want to bring this up because I do have this written down on my pages here that you both skipped the podcast to go to that movie.
Oh, God.
Listen, and we were punished as such, okay? Yeah,
exactly. All right. I just wanted it thrown out there.
What dicks.
Yeah. All right, so I'm not gonna I'm not gonna crap all over Brad's lovely tusk because he loves it so much. I'm gonna just let it just sit out there as being shit pile. So
I think you make that apparent on Facebook and Twitter and every media site that's ever appeared.
I think you're showing you got no balls. I think you should tackle it.
Such oh my god,
such a wuss, dude! Just get in there.
No, I'm gonna go after. I'm gonna go after two other movies that are just absolutely piles. And the first one is Transcendence. Johnny Depp's just complete. I think this is the lowest point that he could hit. The film had absolutely zero redeeming qualities. I remember seeing it at a screener, and they showed it to us in IMAX. And it was a pretty packed theater. And I think about 25 or 30 minutes into the movies, a young gentleman stood up in the crowd and said, "What the fuck is going on here?" and then left.
That's awesome.
Which pretty much just set the tone for the last hour of the movie, because everybody just sat there going, "Yeah, what the fuck is going on here?" And then to see Johnny Depp as Max Headroom on a screen talking, yeah, I was pretty much done with that. That's definitely the second worst movie I've seen all year.
It was Wally Pfister that directed that, right?
Yeah.
The DP for Nolan?
Yes.
Interesting.
Shameful.
What's his last name?
Pfister with a P.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I know where you're going with that.
No, I'm not going anywhere. That's Michael's domain.
Yeah. And I haven't seen some of these brilliant films like Left Behind or I, Frankenstein or
Saving Christmas, the Kirk Cameron.
I haven't seen all these.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Don't bash the modern day version of Jesus.
Yeah.
We all know, like Kanye West said, Jesus walks.
Yeah. No, I think he said Yeezus, but that's okay.
Yeah. Oh, Yeezy is down here in Atlanta. He's awesome.
I'm going to say that the Transformers Age of Extinction is another one of the worst films probably of all time. And I desperately implore the world to never see another Transformers movie so we don't have to deal with Michael Bay again. But I know that that's not going to happen because you all suck and you will go out and spend $1 billion to see a Transformers movie that makes 100% no sense and destroys your childhood, considering the fact that Optimus Prime would never say, "We're going to kill all these humans." It would never happen.
Why the fuck did you see it then?
Because I'm a fucking stupid asshole.
So now, hold on. Is this solely based on the facts that it was missing the superb acting talents of Miss Austin Green?
Oh, yes. No, actually, you know, it was. I was really welcoming the moving on from Shia and Megan Fox, and thought maybe Wahlberg would bring something to the table. And they really gave him nothing. And Stanley Tucci is in it too, and it was completely a waste of his time. And the water that's running in the background too, that really...
Brad,
So do you think that Michael Bay like has cameras in all these people's houses and has like odd sexual videos of all these people and their perversions?
I mean, he must, because I mean, when I think of a movie that he's made, I can't really pinpoint one in the last almost 15, 20 years that he's made that's been actually good. And the Transformers franchise makes billions of dollars because it's just a bunch of robots kicking the crap out of each other and blowing things up. And if that's all you want, that's great. But guess what it doesn't need to be? 2 hours and 40 minutes. Thank you very much.
Is this worse than Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch's second album?
Is that the one with that Walk on the Wild Side cut? Because that song's a jam.
No, I think this is the one with the cut of like his cover of ABC's 1, 2, 3.
Ooh.
I gotta cut myself off.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
No comment.
He didn't put a movie. He must not have put a movie out this year. It's been on Melissa's.
So, just on our way out the door, will the world actually commit complete orgasm when Christian Bale, Ryan Gosling, and What's his face?
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt are all on the same screen together.
I think it'll be a jizz fest.
Oh, is that in Avengers 3?
Jerk. So we've pretty much hit an eclectic group of films as our best and as our worst. And definitely we will list all these films on realnewsdaily.com. So you'll be able to check these lists out, put them down on your Netflix queue or on your Redbox or whatever else, however else you watch your films. And you will be set to go for the first half of 2015. And I believe that we will probably be talking about some of these films in our Oscar and our Razzie conversation in the coming days.
Oscar nominations tomorrow morning, bitches.
Tomorrow morning.
Oh, my God. Is it tomorrow?
Yes. 15, 17, something like that.
Yeah.
Fuck work. Turn it on. Guess what I'm doing? I'm going to work early so I can catch that shit. Are you kidding me?
I'm just wondering if...
What time's Justin Long's acceptance speech?
I'm just wondering if we're gonna ever get to like a sweet 64 of films, because we're at like what, 9 movies now is up for Best Picture. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's getting a little bit much. I think
it could be 10. Whatever, man. You have to remember that this is the annual masturbation fest by the people in Hollywood, so they can jerk each other off. If they're not jerking off 9 movies, then they can't make money off the 10.
Half of the voting academy is over 75.
Jesus.
They'll die soon enough, Petrelli.
And they can't watch past an hour and 20 minutes of movies before they're snoring. So they're not even seeing the movie.
They have to go to the bathroom because of incontinence.
You know what? They're pulling a Dwayne on what's happening. they're picking the winner by the cool hats or the names.
There you go.
Huh? Yeah.
Wow, it's rare that you get a what's happening reference in there.
I'm down
with the Wu.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go with this, Raekwon? Are we going to get some Master Killer in there?
Hoping ODB, but it's all right.
Real Big Show ain't nothing to fuck with.
That's right. Wow. There you go.
All right, so for the Real Big Show crew, Liz, Melissa, Brad, Jeremy,
there's no I in Walrus,
and myself. Thanks for listening for this hour and 7 minute journey down best of 2014, and we will see you next week. Good night, y'all.
Good night.